They never said they would stop building settlements, and, you know, they continued to encroach into more territory in the West Bank. So when I look at the structure of this deal, there's a lot of room for Netanyahu to engage in kind of tomfoolery.
Donald Trump arrives in Israel as Israeli hostages detained since October 7, 2023, will be released by Hamas. So when you look at this, how significant is this day?
I don't want to just be like a hater, but I mean, like, we already had peace in the Middle East in Trump's first term. I remember them saying that over and over again, peace in the Middle East, peace in the Middle East. Trump does this thing. He's very good at like saying he has all these deals, but there are no deals. And then he just keeps saying it until everybody believes it, even though they're not actually there. Unless something has changed, you know, as of my flight over, I've read the, was it 20 or 21 point plan?
20.
Nothing has actually been like worked out, I don't think.
Well, phase one is today. Well, phase one is over the weekend. So yeah, that is working out today, where the hostages will be released, and of course these political prisoners.
And then they, I think it's some 2,000 Palestinians, I think, are supposed to be released from Israeli prisons.
250, yeah.
Was it 250?
250 Palestinian prisoners will be released today.
The there's like a lot of vagueness in each of the points, so I'm not entirely sure what it means long term, or if this is just another thing that kind of like falls apart again after a couple weeks. I feel like we've had a lot of ceasefires and we've heard them say the problem has been solved a lot. It seems like a deal that it looks like Israel is getting a lot out of it, I would say. And this, I'm typically the pro-Israel guy, but it kind of reads like kind of like an Oslo III agreement. You know, they're talking about de-radicalizing the entire Palestinian Authority. I don't know what all that entails. I don't think there are any details of that. They're saying that Hamas is to be completely removed from the government. I'm not sure. Does that mean that anybody that was part of the government before can't be a part of the new government, period, or they just can't have the Hamas entity? I don't know if that's like been solved yet. I mean, like, anything that stops the fighting, I think, is good, just because I'm sick of talking about it and I don't want to have any more of my, you know, U.S. politics brain wasted on Israel-Palestine. I don't know how many more times, you know, Netanyahu can invade Gaza to look for Hamas. It feels like it's kind of run its course. So, yeah. But no, I'm not giving any credit to Trump when I feel like this war has ran its course, has ran its course for like so long. And you know, now they're finally winding it down and figuring out some kind of off ramp. And I mean, I don't even know what there's left to shoot bombs at on the Gaza Strip anymore.
But do you think he should? I mean, you're correct in the saying that there is so much this 20-point peace plan that hasn't happened yet, and there is so much kind of, I guess, pessimism in terms of if this would happen. But for right now, today, obviously, quite a few hostages that have been detained for over 2 years today will be released back to their families. And it was Donald Trump, I guess, and his administration that got that over the line. So do you think he should deserve a little bit of credit for at least that? Because this is a big deal, these hostages coming home. Obviously, the prisoners also, but the fact that there's also been a 72-hour ceasefire, but that will end pretty much right now.
I mean, it's nice. Hostages coming back are always a nice thing. If Hamas actually leaves, that's a nice thing. I don't know how much credit or you know, how much Trump had to do, you know, with engineering this outcome. It seems like if he had a significant input in anything, he would have been able to end it sooner. So it seems like it's kind of run its course. And now, you know, here we are at the end. Whatever that means, yeah.
Why do you think Trump could broker at least this phase one? Even if it was him, it was Jared Kushner, it was Steve Witkoff, could get this deal of phase one over the line with Hamas and Israel, but Biden couldn't, because the hostages was a strategic tool from Hamas. That was kind of what they had, their card to play. Biden unveiled his own three-phase plan back in May 2024. Israel accepted it, Hamas did not. And as you mentioned, there were a few ceasefires put in place. We thought that this was going to happen. And then on certain occasions, it didn't happen. But today, that part of the phase has gone through. These people will be returned. Prisoners will be released, as you said. There's been this 72-hour ceasefire, partial withdrawal of Israeli troops out of Gaza. So I wonder, why did Trump get this through, but Biden couldn't?
If I had to guess, it's just probably the resolve of the Hamas resistance side has been pretty broken over the past year. I mean, all of their leadership has been killed. You know, Israel's shown they don't even care about striking into, you know, Qatar. We had the bombing in Iran from the United States. You know, we've seen Hezbollah was basically completely dismantled. You know, Nasrallah was killed. Yeah, I mean, at this point, it seems like there's not much left on the Hamas side in terms of resistance. So, yeah, I think Netanyahu got a lot of really lucky, a really good string of wins militarily over the past year and a half. So I think he's got, you know, he can ride on that popularity. And then if they, you know, get the hostages freed now, yeah, I don't know what else Hamas has left to fight with. Although I would have said that like 6 months ago too, but yeah.
Obviously, that was all part of the 20-point peace plan, as we mentioned. Phase one, obviously, being completed over the weekend or happening right now. But phase two, phase three, phase four, kind of where the real work begins. So I want to read out really what this entails. Phase two is literally the demilitarization and security, so the destruction of Hamas's offensive weaponry. So this literally includes getting rid of all the tunnels, their missile infrastructure to neutralize its capacity to threaten Israel. Gaza will become a de-radicalized, terror-free zone. Phase three is the establishment of this transitional government structure. So obviously that would mean that Hamas no longer actually in a governing body, that they would create a new government, and there's the creation of the Board of Peace, which is this Tony Blair and Donald Trump thing.
So, can you clarify, is that Board of Peace, is it supposed to be the U.S. president on that, or is it Donald Trump?
He's on the board. No,
well, no, I know Donald Trump is on the board, but is it just him?
Donald
or
Trump.
Okay, yeah, because I don't...
Mm-hmm. And then obviously more humanitarian aid. And then I guess stage four is the reconstruction and pathway to Palestinian self-determination and recognition of statehood. So basically there is a lot to do from now on. So do you think we can move out into phase two, three, and four? Do you think Trump will be able to get there?
I mean, so this is like my broad, you know, like encompassing history to where we are today kind of feeling about things is I don't think that Netanyahu is a good partner for peace, for long-term peace for the Palestinians. Netanyahu, to me, always comes off as a bit opportunist, and that, you know, if he's forced to make some kind of peaceful agreement or deal, he will, but he's always going to be, you know, nibbling around the edges to push as far as he can. Mm. So like the Abraham Accords, I think, were largely spurred by Netanyahu wanting to annex more parts of Area C, I think, outside of Jerusalem. And, you know, it's always like trying to take a little bit more. And when I look at this agreement, you know, it's really like a framework, you know.
Yeah.
I feel like it almost resembles, like Oslo 1, the Oslo Accords, and Oslo 2, like in 93 and 95. And the problem with those is that they were frameworks, they were patchwork, but both sides felt like both sides were kind of not adhering well to the agreement. You know, Arafat was always reluctant to call off violence, and he didn't when the Second Intifada broke out. They never said they would stop building settlements, and, you know, they continued to encroach into more territory in the West Bank. So when I look at the structure of this deal, there's a lot of room for Netanyahu to engage in kind of tomfoolery. You know, whether, I don't know what it means when he says he wants to, it looks like he wants to like take apart the Palestinian Authority. It looks like they want to have their own government in the Gaza Strip. Like, is Netanyahu ever going to be okay with a unified government in the Gaza Strip and the West Bank?
Well, I think he has to be. I think it's meant to be a Palestinian government that he has no control over.
For both, yeah. Well, yeah, we say no control, though, but like if Trump is going to be there and Trump doesn't know anything about Israel, and Trump will do basically whatever Netanyahu, you know, asks him to do, or it seems that way. It seems like Netanyahu's got a really long leash on this. Like, it just doesn't feel like a good situation if you're a Palestinian. You're hoping for some kind of long-term resolution. It looks like you're basically allowing Israel to dictate more terms to the Palestinian people for an indefinite period of time, because there are no strict timelines or anything. Yeah.
Well, the other thing is that Donald Trump basically said if Hamas doesn't sign off on the rest of this proposal, that he basically would give license to Netanyahu for total obliteration of Hamas. Isn't
yeah, but
that
I mean, like,
the means the war continues.
Yeah, but I mean, like, what else are they going to obliterate? I don't know. Also, how many times has Trump said that? I feel like Trump said that. I think it might have been the day he got elected. He was like, they said that they're going to release all the hostages, and if they don't, then it's going to be total obliteration. And this was like almost a year ago at this point. So yeah,
this
I don't even know
threat.
What else.
Foreign policy expert Harley Lipman, he told Sky News that the next stages will be very difficult. He said, remember, Hamas still bristles at the notion of disarming, so what they'll probably do is hide weapons. They may give up some, but it's there. Hamas is not like ISIS. Hamas will adjust and adapt. They even said it. They'll participate in political process. They're very unusual that way. They know what they need to do for the moment is to just adjust to the new reality. They've done it before. So while they may be down, as the expression goes, they're far from out. So, I mean, Stephen, if this is the case, should the Trump administration be refraining from continuing to say that the war is over? Because that's what they've said.
Yeah, but I mean, like, he also says he's ended 7 wars, or I guess 8 now. So you kind of just have to ignore whatever comes out of the White House for the next 3 or 4 years, because it's all kind of fantasy.
Is that what you do as an American?
Well, I mean, I cover it, but I don't take it very seriously. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not quoting Trump for what's going on in the world, basically.
Have you ever taken any administration seriously at their word?
Yeah, for sure. I think we live in a new era where the problem is like Trump doesn't have a comprehensive vision, I think, for what Israel-Palestine should look like or what anything in the Middle East should look like. And, you know, Witkoff is running around. I don't know all the time if he knows what's going on. Like he was our envoy to Russia, for instance. And I remember listening to him talk to Tucker Carlson, and he didn't know any of the regions that were being contested. Yeah. And that was just very strange to me because I think a month later he's talking to Putin, supposedly the one that's working out deals. So,
well, at one point he didn't take a translator.
Oh, they used the Russian-provided ones. Yeah. I remember that. Yeah, there's a lot of weird stuff. But I think the issue, it sucks because I just sound like a hater, but like I do believe that the issue is one of kind of like knowledge and vision. Mm. Like Trump just doesn't have a good idea of what he wants like any of these parts of the world to look like. And if you don't have like a guiding vision, well, then who's to say who you're listening to or what you're trying to like guide people towards?
Do you think that he's more so looking at this situation, not just Israel and Gaza, any sort of global conflict that he's wishing to solve? He almost wants to just wrap it up into a bow, but then forget about it.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
So he wants to say, I've solved this, but then he wants to wipe his hands clean.
Yeah, basically, yeah. That's why he keeps getting so mad at Putin, because every time they have a talk and then Putin starts bombing stuff again, that's why he's getting real mad and he's starting to side more and more with the Ukrainians because he feels like he's being taken for a ride, which he is.
He feels like he's being lied to.
Yeah, go figure.
Stephen, I want to get your thoughts on the government shutdown. It's ended its 12th day today. It doesn't seem like there really is an end in sight. Just for our audience.
Wait, it ended today?
No, 12th day, but it doesn't seem.
Oh, the day.
It doesn't seem like there is an end in sight. It's estimated that around 900,000 federal employees are furloughed. 700,000 are working without pay. 4,200 federal employees have already been cut, actually with permanent layoffs. So what's your take been on this shutdown? Do you think it could have been avoided?
Yeah, of course it could have been, but I mean, at this point, I think if we're on day 12, then as of yesterday, I think Trump has presided over more shutdown government than every other U.S. president combined. So, and the majority in almost all of those shutdown governments, it's been the Republicans who had the Senate and the House of Representatives, both halves of our Congress, our parliament or whatever, and to see... Yeah, Trump continue to have shut down governments while owning both halves of Congress. He's just, legislatively, he's just an incredibly ineffective president. And it's very frustrating because he always has an excuse. But back in 2016, Trump was sold to us as the great deal maker. That was supposed to be his one thing, is that he could get everybody together and kind of negotiate. And it seems like he absolutely cannot do that. He refused to meet with the heads of the minority parties in our Senate and Congress, our Senate and House, Hakeem Jeffries and Chuck Schumer. He wouldn't meet with them. And then eventually when they did come in, you know, he's got his Trump 2028 hat on the table. And it's just like everything's like a joke to this guy. So
it's trolling, yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean... The Republicans are playing games. Mike Johnson, you know, is making all the rounds in the media. They keep lying about the Democrats want to give $1.5 trillion to illegal immigrant health care, which is not really possible. And then somehow we're in this bizarro world where Republicans are bragging about a new tax they have and the money they're making from it, the import tax, the tariff tax. And then we're also doing, I think we just finalized our swap. It was a $20 billion bailout for Argentinian farmers. I don't know why or how anybody's okay with that. So, yeah, I don't know what the play is. I think Trump doesn't care about anything beyond his own image. So as long as the Republican kind of propaganda machine can hold the party together and keep blaming the Democrats, as long as he feels like he's popular in his party, I don't know if he'll care much. Yeah.
What do you think about their argument saying that Democrats have basically delayed this because they wanted, you know, to make these provisions to healthcare and that they were using this as an opportunity? They needed to use this momentum and use it, I guess, use this 7-week period to try and get what they wanted, because you said they don't control anything.
I mean, well, one, that's part of, I guess, Congress. You have to make deals with the people across the aisle. When they keep pointing out, well, you guys signed 12 or 13, you know, continuing resolutions. Yeah, because both sides were talking. But when the Republicans refuse to budge on anything and they're not willing to meet or make any concessions at all, like the biggest indicator, if you've ever been in a fight with a partner or watched two people fight with each other, the biggest way that you can tell who's in the right is when one side is making stuff up about the other side. And it's like, oh, okay, well, all of it. So when he's running around saying $1.5 trillion, right, when I'm having a debate with somebody and their first point sucks, I know their whole argument is bunk, because you lead with your strongest, you know, point. So, no, I mean, like, if it's just going to be lie after lie after lie after what the Democrats want, and again, you guys control both halves of Congress, this argument of like, well, you know, we just need 10 days, or we just want to patch it for a couple weeks, or whatever. What have you been doing until now? This date was not a mystery. It's not like it popped up out of nowhere. Like, everybody knew when the last, you know,
what was going to happen.
Yeah, so I don't understand this. We need a little bit more time. Like, what are you doing? Yeah.
But even on that, you know, I feel like it's so easy to be sitting in your ivory tower on the top when you're in government. But the reality is like these government shutdowns affect everyday people. So contractors like cafeteria workers, cleaners, they're going to have their, they won't receive back pay for this 12 plus days that they're out of work. There will also be delayed paychecks for 2 million federal workers. And of course, this will affect small businesses and the wider economy. So are they working quicker, Congress? Are they working quick enough with the idea of who they're working for? Does that make sense? Do they know who they're trying to help?
The government?
Yeah. Or they just so in their own world?
That's a complicated question because we're so detached from reality in our media environment. Mm. And one of the reasons why Republicans have gotten away with lying about everything for so long is because we're so detached from reality. People don't see the impact sometimes of what they vote for. And the American people voted, not just, you know, in the Electoral College, but even in the popular vote, we voted for a conservative government. And if Americans are going to keep voting for conservative governments that keep shutting down the government, that keep having people not get paid, that keep building Qatari air bases or allowing them to train F-15 pilots in our country and bail out Argentinian farmers and bail out our own farmers because our trade wars are costing us money. Mm. I mean, that's what the American people are voting for. Like, I don't know. It can't be that you're always blaming the minority party for every single thing that's going on. Like, are you saying you can't govern unless you have a supermajority in both halves of Congress and the presidency and a 6-3 Supreme Court? Like it doesn't make any sense. You can't. It's like a totally ineffective government.
Do you think that's how the Republicans operate in terms of blaming the minority party? Or do you think Democrats have done that when they've been in power?
Absolutely not.
Really?
No. McConnell literally said for Obama, we're going to make him a one-term president. Barack Obama had the longest Supreme Court vacancy of any president in all of U.S. history because they refused to give him a Supreme Court pick. That's an insane thing to lose out on. And now we don't have abortion in the United States anymore. And now Donald Trump is immune from criminal prosecution. The Republicans just play this game of they've gotten further and further detached from reality. So they think that they can just throw a hissy fit on anything and tell Americans whatever they want to tell them to make anything happen that they want to happen. But at some point, you have to actually do your job.
Trump on Saturday, he said that we have identified funds to pay military troops on October 15, and he will direct our Secretary of War, Pete Hegseth, to use all available funds to get our troops paid on October 15th, so this week. So what's your reaction to that, Stephen? Because does it relieve pressure on the Congress to basically continue the shutdown because they don't have that pressure of not being able to pay troops? But also, do you consider it unequal treatment to the rest of federal workers that aren't getting paid?
Yeah, I don't know the obsession with just paying, with saying some workers are like more important than others. Yeah. Especially from Donald Trump, who loved to make fun of McCain for being a prisoner of war and would make fun of Gold Star families and everything else. I understand he's virtue signaling in a different direction now, but no, I mean, like, your job is to fund the government and make the government work. You are the great negotiator. You've sold us that, you know, over and over again that you can make deals happen. How can you not negotiate with your majority-owned Congress? There's no excuse. It's like, he said, you know, in the past, he said, well, the president owns whatever the shutdown is, and now you're the president and you have the Congress. Like, figure it out.